using his unique electronic system, you are in contact with the world of excitement on Bob Kennedy Contact. Well, you know, hardly had Major Kehoe, director of NICAP, National Investigating Committee on Aerial Phenomenon, departed Boston a week or so ago, and the balloon really went up out in Michigan. At least something went up out there, because we have a whole rash of reports of unidentified flying objects that were sighted in the Ann Arbor area. They were seen by farmers, by policemen, the civil defense director, co-eds, roughly about 400 in all. What were they? Well, we'll get some opinions tonight, some from the official Air Force investigator who was sent to the scene, some from Major Kehoe in Washington, and also from that civil defense director in Michigan. And later we'll be hearing from a reporter out there who interviewed any number of eyewitnesses. How about you, too? Have you had any sightings lately? You wonder what this thing called a UFO is, what it's all about? I tell you what, this place is liable to explode tonight in electronic mist before the evening is over, because we have hooked up a line between Washington and back to Michigan, and Washington will have, for a while, Dick Hall, the assistant director of the National Investigating Committee on Aerial Phenomenon. They will have the civil defense director from Hillsdale, Michigan, Bud Van Horn, on the long-distance line. We'll be here in Boston. We'll have Streeter Stewart with us in a little bit, Streeter from WBZ News, of course, and also a member of NICAP at UNI Line, so we really have something going. And we'll be back getting our conversation underway, but first, let's have this message. Paul, how are you?
Fine.
Very good. And hello, Bud Van Horn in Michigan.
Hello, Bob.
Bud, can you hear Dick?
I can hear Dick fine.
Dick, can you hear Bud?
Yes, very well.
Okay, off we go then. I think we'll begin with Dick Hall, Bud, if you don't mind, down in Washington. Dick, of course, is the assistant director of the National Investigating Committee on Aerial Phenomenon. Major Kehoe is on his way to Washington, and he'll be joining us a little bit later. But having been involved in these saucer shows, Dick, for about 3.5 years here on Contact, offhand, it seems to me that this is probably one of the biggest rash of sightings that I have ever seen in the past 3 years anyhow. How does this stack up according to other flaps that you've had?
Well, the only one that was comparable to it at all was in November and December of 1957, and this is, if it keeps up at the present pace, we'll outdo that one. We have literally dozens of reports pouring in right now from all over the country.
So it's not only Michigan.
Not only Michigan, no, they're throughout the south and the far west.
There was one up in Vancouver.
The map is just prickling with thin.
Mm-hmm. Any particular theory as to why?
I think the sightings have been going on very steadily since last summer, and I think the only difference right now is that they got some publicity for a change, and something touched off the wire services and the national network people, and therefore it's brought it more out into the open.
Well, of course, I guess it's something that touched off the wire services was the fact that so many people were seeing them at one time up in Michigan in the Hillsdale, the Ann Arbor area, correct? And
yes,
this in
I think
itself
it was
is
the nearness to Ann Arbor and the University of Michigan and the radio telescope site that probably did it, plus the fact that Bud Van Horn was one of the witnesses and the deputy sheriff.
Gentlemen, we've just been joined by Streeter Stewart here of WBZ News and also a member of NICAP. Streeter, we're currently talking about the fact that this flap out in Michigan, at least from the shows we have been doing here on Contact, seems to be a rather big one, and I guess from people interested in this thing, a rather important one, correct?
Yes, I think so. I think the reports have said that the reports were the most consistent that they had by a large number of people in a long time. However, Dr. Hynek's report that it was probably swamp gas will probably put a damper on that. He didn't say that it positively was swamp gas, but from all indications, as far as he could find out, he thought that it was swamp gas arising now in the springtime because it was rather warm and these people were seeing clouds of swamp gas.
We'll hear portions of that statement a little bit later on. Straight away, we have Bud Van Horn. He's the civil defense director out in Hillsdale for Hillsdale County. And he has seen the UFOs. In fact, he watched one last night. I wonder, do you go along with the theory of Mr. Van Horn that it would be gas out there that caused this?
Definitely not, Bob. Very definitely not.
Mm-hmm.
Bob, I would like to ask Mr. Van Horn why he didn't report this to the nearest Air Force and have them send some planes over to investigate what this thing actually was while he watched it from 11 until 2.
Because on the previous reports to Selfridge Air Force Base, I have received very poor reception and have been made to look like a very ignorant person. And this occurred last night for your information, and this information shall be released in the near future.
You mean the reason for sighting last night?
Right.
What did it look like? Can you give us an indication of it?
Yes, Ken Bob. Mm-hmm. It was one of the most perfect sightings that we have had in the last 10 years that I have been receiving these reports and tracking them down. The object was long in shape. Now, this is a different shape than I have ever been able to determine before, and I think the reason for it was that it was closer to the surface of the Earth. I estimated the altitude of this at approximately 18,000 feet.
Have you seen them before, you said, than I've been able to estimate before?
Pardon?
Have you seen them at other times?
Yes, I have seen them many of times. And I have not bothered to report them to any agency because I did not feel that the Air Force was interested in them.
Mm-hmm. How many times have you seen them in the last week or so out there?
Oh, we've seen many of them, Bob. Many of them. I can't tell you how many. Mm-hmm.
But how many you've seen them every night? You've been watching them?
Pardon?
Have you been seeing them every night out there?
Not every night because, really, I haven't been watching for them every night. There's hardly a night that has gone by, I would say, in the last 2 weeks, that I have not received a reporting of a UFO.
Don't you think this is rather a serious situation where there isn't enough liaison between the civil defense in the county and the Air Force, particularly where civil defense is concerned about what these might be, and the Air Force supposedly also being concerned, especially with anything that might be a threat to our security?
Right. Just let me relate to you what happened last night. This is really an exclusive because I have not released it to any information to newspaper or radio media today. Is it all right if I do this, Bob?
You run ahead.
I observed this after following a report of this having followed a train between the small village of Allen and the city of Hillsdale last night. And the train, I tried very hard to convince the engineer who reported it that it was an aircraft, possibly. After listening to him and finding that this was going alongside the train and then speeded up to a great speed, then stopped, and the train, which was a freight train, was able to come up to it again. It hovered in the air and came further to the city of Hillsdale and then took off.
Mm-hmm.
They sighted it, followed it, and they immediately phoned me, and I immediately got on it. At that time that I got on it, I was able to visually, with the naked eye, see this object in the sky. It appeared to be elongated, and at the top, it had a green light, or a blue, which is sometimes referred to. In the center was a white light, and on the bottom was a red light. And upon viewing this, I then put the binoculars on it, which brought it up very plain, and it still appeared to be elongated, and through the binoculars, which were 7x50s, appeared to be about the length, maybe a little longer than the length of a common pin. I immediately called Selfridge Air Force Base in attempt to get a radar confirmation on this, and was given the runaround. I asked why a chase plane couldn't be put off the ground into the air to check this out. The answer that I got was they were not authorized. I ended up getting my confirmation on this, which I did get the confirmation on it, through Willow Run Airport radar.
They
and
had
not
this,
a military radar site.
They had this on, sighted on radar then. They had a picture.
Right. We have a confirmation of this. We got an inanimate blip on it, and also we got the second. There was two of them there. And to go a little further and to tell you merely that I witnessed the docking and separation of two of these in the air last night. That's all I will say.
Well, Bob, this really is a fantastic development, and this is news that I hadn't heard on any news wire or from any source whatsoever.
I have not released this. I will suppress all information from now on. I will not release any information whatsoever to anybody. This is an exclusive for you, Bob.
Okay, fine. Thank you so much. I'd be very interested in Dick Hall's reaction to that, and then we have lots of people waiting to join us on our long-distance line and our local line. Rather, we got so many lines out of here, I'm getting mixed up. On our local line, the people in Boston, because we'll be on the long-distance line with Major Kehoe, also with that reporter out there, Daniel Campbell, reporter at the Ypsilanti Press in Ypsilanti, Michigan, who has interviewed many of the eyewitnesses. Peter Stewart's our guest here in Boston on our long-distance line in Washington. Is the assistant director of NICAP, Dick Hall, in Michigan. On a special conference call is Bud Van Horn, the civil defense director for Hillsdale County out there. We heard quite a startling story from Bud Van Horn. Dick, what was your reaction to that before we get to some calls here in Boston?
Well, I think it's a very impressive report, and I'm glad to get some of the details directly from Bud Van Horn. We had heard rumors about this, and we're glad to hear it confirmed. We have had similar reports in the past of objects joining up in the air, and I think his description of it as a docking operation is very interesting.
You know, something that I'd like to talk with Major Kehoe about a little bit later, but I was intrigued by finding out that the Republican leader of the House, Senator Ford, has called Representative Ford, isn't she? Is it Representative Senator?
Gerald
Ford. I don't know anyone. Republican leader, House Republican leader, has to be Representative, of course. Gerald Ford called for a full-blown investigation of unidentified flying object sightings. This is something that Major Kehoe has been talking about for quite a few years.
Bob?
Yes, sir.
Major Kehoe just came in, so I'll turn it over to him.
Okay, fine. Major Kehoe, how are you?
Hi, Bob.
Fine. Stephen Stewart's with us here in Boston, too.
Oh, say hello for me.
You can say hello to him. He's right here.
Oh,
hi, Major. Good to have you with us. And, of course, Major on our long-distance line out in Michigan is the civil defense director, Hillsdale County, Bud Van Horn. I'd like, a little bit later, if you don't mind, because I want to take some phone calls, talk about House Republican Leader Ford's statement today that he'd like to see a full-blown investigation of UFOs.
Yes.
Okay, right now let's take a call. Bob Kennedy, you're on contact. You're on the air. Hello? Yes, ma'am.
This is Watson calling from West Peabody.
Yes.
In regard to a sighting my husband saw in Revere.
Mm-hmm.
He was driving along Revere, and he saw it with a friend of his, a next door neighbor.
When was this?
Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
And they came across some police cruisers, and police stopped naturally. Mm-hmm. It was a matter, and they saw a cigar-shaped object hovering over where the Revere airport used to be. And my next door neighbor, who happened to have a camera in the car, took a picture. Now, for reasons of his own, he has declined to show his picture to anybody. And I was wondering if anybody would be interested in the picture. Would you show it to, or what do you do about this?
Sure, bring it in here. We'd be very interested in seeing it.
It's a beautiful photograph.
And then I'm sure Streeter would like to take a look at it as a representative of NICAP, and he'll get to the right hands. But why don't you have your husband drop it off?
All right.
Okay.
That's amazing radio.
Right, and we guarantee anonymity.
All right.
Just drop it off and no questions asked.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for calling. Got your picture, Streeter. Bob Kennedy, you're in contact now. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to direct my question to Major Kehoe.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to know his opinion on the fact why, whenever the a sighting of UFOs is reported to the Air Force, why the Air Force very rarely reports its findings to the public, because you find a number of the times the Air Force keeps quiet on them. They never hardly ever report their findings to the public, although they do get national press coverage, but the Air Force never comments on them.
All right, Major.
Well, there is a high-level policy which the Air Force carries out. Well, these things must be played down, explained if possible, to avoid hysteria, perhaps panic. The Air Force really should not be blamed too much for this. This policy is set at a very high level, and there are many people in the Air Force that don't even believe in it. They think that it's bound to cause trouble sooner or later. But under that policy, all of the project people and the Air Force spokesman and the press desk officers are required to explain as many sightings as they can, even though some of the answers are obviously bordering on the ridiculous.
All right, Bob Kennedy, you're on the air. You're in contact. Hello,
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes, sir.
First of all, I'd like to say that I'm a believer, but you and Major Keogh over the past few months have made my wife a real believer.
Uh-oh.
And,
you know, I don't know, Major Keogh, I'm not a believer. I don't think I'm one of the initiated. I'm not one of the born-again believers in UFOs. I kind of sit here, hopefully, with somewhat of a cynic's attitude about this. I think that's my job.
Well, true, yeah.
But if I were so interested, I would be very concerned with people using the word believer, because it almost has a mystical.
Well, maybe it's wishful thinking then, right?
Well, I don't know if that's it, but Streeter, does it bother you when people say, I am a believer in?
It really doesn't bother me. I think what they really mean is that I think that these things are real, and I think that there is something to it, that they're not just marsh gas and so on.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I had two comments I'd like some expert opinion on, if I could.
Sure.
I'm calling from Cape Cod.
All right.
And the first one is, I've read articles by prominent scientists, I think, at least they say they are, from Harvard and other places, who say that they've gathered from passages, not directly from the Bible, but, things like the Rosetta Stone, but not exact. I'm not saying the Rosetta Stone itself. Things they've translated from recorded history that people back then talked about the great firebird that came from the sky and the little golden man that jumped out of it and looked around and got back in his firebird and in a great blast of fire took off. And the scientists said that they thought possibly we had been visited, our planet had been visited and watched over, something like you would watch over a garden pretty regularly for the past, maybe 5-10,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like some comment on that. And also, I guess I'm the only one that saw it, but I remember when the first pictures that the Russians sent back from the moon, the backside of the moon, I don't know whether it was a photography blur or what it was. It seemed to be a little spike sticking up. And since the moon has no high mountains on it that are discernible from where we sit or from the pictures, of course, I told my wife and some of the immediate family that wouldn't think I was a complete crackpot that, well, this guy had also said, when we send somebody to the back of the moon, don't be surprised to find an observation station there that has been built by these people. Maybe from another part of the galaxy or something else, because what more perfect place than a place which never turns around and faces the Earth? And those are just the two things that I'd like to know if maybe some of the people with you there have given any thought to this question at all.
Sure.
And since you're waiting for calls, I'll hang up and see if I can get the answer. But thank you very much.
Okay. Street, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yes. It is well known that historically and archaeologically, there has been evidence, and also the evidence from the Bible, that there have been things which some people have said were unidentified flying objects which came from outer space and visited the Earth. There were drawings, for example, that are reported to have been from several thousand years B.C., which showed creatures with very large heads and very small legs and arms, which some have said were an indication that these were creatures from outer space and not worldly creatures. The wheel that Ezekiel tells about seeing in the Bible, some people say was a vehicle from outer space. Dr. Menzel of Harvard says that he thinks that probably it was some type of a reflection sun-dog combination, a natural phenomenon. But it is true that in the Mayan Peninsula and other areas, there have been prehistoric and historical evidences that perhaps could be interpreted as UFOs.
Gentlemen, let me interrupt here. We have a few messages, and then we'll be back continuing our conversation. And then, Bud, I'd be very interested in finding out if you have any particular feelings as to why, as you said a little bit earlier, the Air Force gave you somewhat of a runaround when you called them as a civil defense director out there in Hillsdale County, if you have any feelings why they might have done this. Now, Bud Van Horn, I asked you a question before the commercials there about if you had any feeling as to why the Air Force gave you, as you call it, a runaround last season.
Bob, this is the third reporting. The two previous that I have phoned in, the same thing occurred. This is why I haven't bothered to waste my time phoning any others in. I can't figure this out. They have this UFO investigation program, but If I had to give an honest opinion, I would say it was one of two things. Either they just plain are interested. Every report they receive means too much paperwork, or else they know what it is. But as a person who is interested in taking care of his community, and by the way, I don't get paid for this job. It's the gratis job in my hobby group. I feel that there certainly should be something done. Now, last night I asked for a chase plane, if it was possible to get a chase plane off to check this out. The airman that I was talking to said no, they weren't authorized.
Yeah.
Well, if they're intently interested in this UFO program, and they want to check these out, and they don't know what they are, and they really want to find out what they are, to my way of thinking, there should be things that should be authorized here that they can take immediate action on. I think it's very poor planning.
Bud, you know, one thing, if I can kind of jump over the other side of the fence here, and having once upon a time in my life sat inside a control center like that and gotten some phone calls, not specifically like this, but, you know, it costs a good deal of money to run one of those things off the ground. It's, we think, well, gee, just take a, you know, run the airplane up. I forget the cost at one time where just to get one off the ground, I think it's something like $10,000. And there is always a danger of life. And I guess they want to make darn certain what they're going after. And though perhaps they should do some regulation. And if, for instance, like a civil defense director calls up about it, perhaps they should scramble on it. But on the other hand, they really have to think about what they're running an airplane up. That's a major piece of equipment over, you know.
Well, Bob, my feeling on this is that there are many things done where our government don't worry about spending the money. And I'm sure that the planes are used. In fact, I know personally where the aircraft have been used for different various things where, if you want to get right down to brass tacks, weren't important.
Yeah.
It all depends. I mean, if they're interested in this program, fine. If they aren't, why don't they say so?
Okay, Bud, thank you very much for joining us. We have an edition of WBC News coming up, and we'll continue with our conference call down through to Washington and then joining us a little bit later on our long-distance line to Michigan, so we have to kind of clear the line up there. We'll be Dan Campbell, a reporter on the Ypsilanti Press. And incidentally, in case it's a good windy evening and we're getting out there to Michigan, and we have any of those people who have seen some of the sightings in the past weekend would be willing to spend a little change and call us up, we'd love to hear from you.
Major, we said a little bit earlier we'd talk about the fact that Representative Ford came out today for an investigation. I imagine this makes you sort of an elated man at this point.
Well, we know that a lot of members of Congress have been supporting hearings and urging them for some time. But it's all this changed public attitude and press attitude has encouraged some of them. And now I think that Representative Ford may get some results. We certainly hope so.
And a little bit later, we'll be playing a portion of the press conference that Dr. J. Allen Hynek held today, the investigator from the Air Force and the Project Blue Book out there. He, of course, said that the flying objects were due to luminous swamp gas. But he admitted he couldn't prove it. Did you chuckle, Major?
Well,
did you hear a chuckle down in Washington? Pardon, sir?
You can call it a chuckle if you want to.
Okay, fine. Do you have any particular theories, or have you been filtering the reports out down there about why or what or why particularly out in Michigan at this particular time? Why so many?
Well, no, we haven't figured out any pattern which would give a conclusion like that, but quite often there's been a concentration in a certain area over a period of time, and then it ends and the concentration begins somewhere else. Now, for a long time there was one up there in New England, and now it seems to be shifting over into the Middle West. But there's not enough sightings to reach a conclusion on. I would say perhaps this goes on for a month while we should have a lot more information.
Before we take another phone call, Steve, there was something that Dr. Hynek said in his report today, and I'm certainly not an expert on this, but it seemed, frankly, a rather thin reason as to why it would not be flying saucer. He said he couldn't see why they would pick a swamp. You know, just why? You know, why not? That's the thing I would want if they're looking for a quiet kind of place.
Well, I think his reasoning was that no sensible pilot, as we know them here on Earth, would, whether he was a helicopter pilot, a plane pilot, a pilot of anything that flies, would pick a swamp as a place to actually land. But actually, many of these UFOs seem to hover rather than land. And if they picked out a swamp where people are not expecting this and where they wanted some privacy while they did some observing or gathering some specimens or the like, perhaps a swamp would be an ideal place for them to so-called hover or come close to land.
Treasure, I bet there are any number of people asking this question. I have asked it so many times that sometimes I almost forget to ask it again, but I think it's important. People who might be hearing the program tonight, they say, oh, for heaven's sake, again with those flying saucers, if they're out there, why in the world, if they're watching us and if they're down here? For heaven's sake, if they were, it would seem to me that they'd go right up to Washington, hover over the White House and say, President Johnson, here we are, we're from outer space, how are you? And end all of this controversy once and for all. Well, Bob, you know, these, if there are intelligent creatures in the spacecraft, there's no indication that these are identical to us. It could very well be that if a civilization has reached an advanced state of technology whereby they are able to propel their spaceship at an ever-increasing acceleration, and they can travel at the speed of sound, it's not inconceivable that they are willing to spend the 4 years in space travel that it would take from one of the other suns in our planetary, in our solar system, rather, or outside of our solar system, but in our galaxy, that's what I really mean, to come here and establish a base someplace that we don't know, and then use these so-called surface ships, just as we will use a small capsule to go down to the surface of the moon and make these exploratory contacts. It could very well be that we are going to be very much surprised if they are intelligent beings in these spacecraft, that they're not like human beings at all. So their way of thinking wouldn't be the same. All right, let's take a phone call, gentlemen. Hello?
Hello, yes. Bob, I would like to ask a couple of questions on NICAP.
Sure.
Who is it supported by the federal government, and is it affiliated with the Air Force?
No. Quick answers for you. I can do that. No affiliation with the government, no support from the government.
And also a question on swamp gas. How would swamp gas create an illusion of illuminated objects in the sky at night?
Is there any possibility? I've heard people who have seen swamp fires. Is that what they call it, Peter?
Apparently, there is a phenomenon on this, something like the decaying matter in some logs, the so-called foxfire and all kinds of these false fires. This actually, if it has a certain chemical content in it, a phosphorus, it will glow. I've seen this so evident at night in decaying logs that you could take objects that were made of this, take it into a darkened room, and it would give off a glow that you could readily see. It would almost light up a corner of the room. And if the gas is filled with this particular substance, it would give off an illumination. And then if it came upward because of the expansion of the gas or because of warm temperatures causing the gas to rise, this would create the illusion of something, an object that was rising into the sky. Bob Kennedy, you're in contact, you're on the air. Hello.
Good evening, Bob.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I have a question. I can't remember where I heard this comment. I think it was on the last show you did with Major Keel.
Sure.
But in the comment, it was mentioned that rashes of UFO sightings were usually related to certain planets in the solar system being close to the Earth.
Yeah, the approach of Mars.
Well, I was wondering if there were any planets close to the Earth at this particular time that were under suspicion.
Okay.
And also, sort of a science fiction comment.
Mm-hmm.
About a week and a half ago, I think it was the Russians that sent up a probe that did collide with Mars. And now, a week or so later, you hear about all these UFOs. But I'd like to listen to the answer.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Bob, the Russian one went to Venus. They did actually make a hard contact on Venus. And we have been avoiding that because we don't want to contaminate the planet. And that's why we preferred a flyby, and we did do a flyby of Venus, making observations. Unfortunately, our flyby was so far away that most scientists feel that any results that we had were rather inconclusive. What was the other
planet they talked about?
Whether they were in opposition at this particular time. No, I don't believe that any are that close. However, when they are, it is true that not only have we had an increase in UFO activity at those times, especially when Mars is close by, but scientists have been able to discover many things. And I wish Donald Kehoe would talk a little bit about the report in the UFO Investigator about the confirmation of the canals of Mars. Major?
Well, yes, first reports were released. It was stated out at Jet Propulsion Laboratory that there was absolutely no sign of any of the so-called canals or oases, the areas where the canal lines intersect. Now, it turns out that there actually are lines on these films, on a number of them. Matter of fact, we have seen two or three of these films here in the office. They were shown to us by Dr. Frank Salisbury, who is an eminent exobiologist State University of Colorado, and who has also studied Mars for a long time, and strongly suggests that there may be intelligent life on Mars.
Now, these were films made by the astronauts, weren't they, Major Kehoe?
No, they were made by the Mariner. Remember, the Mariner flew by there and took pictures from a distance of several thousand miles, and you couldn't expect too much detail into it, on the basis of this, Jet Propulsion Laboratory and then NASA said there was no indication of any canals, and that idea remained fixed for a while. Now it turns out that there were lines on the films, and I don't know whether it was thought better not to mention it at the time or whether they were belatedly discovered when somebody made a more careful examination. But they are there. Dr. Pombo, the discoverer of the planet for Pluto, also confirms the fact that he's found several canals on these films.
I understand, too, that there is a movement underfoot to put more money into the Mars exploration and to sort of dismiss or not use the money that we had planned to use for the exploration of Venus, because it was felt that there was a greater reward to be reaped by putting all of our eggs into one basket, so to speak, in the exploration of Mars. Have you heard much on that?
Well, I've heard that too. I don't think any actual figures have been released showing a change in appropriation, but it seems reasonable because Mars has indicated that there's more chance of, our evidence indicates there's more chance of some kind of intelligent life there. If it doesn't exist now, then there possibly was in the past. And I believe it's right. We would get more rewards, and certainly Venus. If all of the reports of the last 2 years are correct, it's very doubtful whether there is any life of the type that we would recognize, at least.
Gentlemen, we have a message or two, then we'll be back continuing our conversation tonight. Our long-distance line from Michigan in a few minutes will be Daniel Campbell, who's a reporter on the Ypsilanti Press. The man has been interviewing many of the people who have sighted some of these objects.
Yes, sir. Hi, Bob. Nice to be with you.
Nice to be with you, too.
I enjoy your show very much.
Thank you so much.
Listen, I have two very brief things. Number one, one of my hobbies is old newspapers and old books. And as a result, I have quite a collection of them. I spend considerable time in the libraries, one in particular, the Boston Public Library. And today, by strange coincidence, I was reading a newspaper, an actual newspaper, the original copy of a thing called the Athenian Mercury, which was published in London in 1692.
Mm-hmm.
This paper consists of letters to the editor and answers. And the fascinating thing about it was that on the front page, there were two flying saucer sites. And this fellow went on to say he was standing by the ocean somewhere there in England.
They didn't call them flying saucers.
No, they didn't. They called them flying dishes, but I thought that was pretty close.
Flying dishes. Wow.
Flying dishes. And he went on to describe in perfect detail pretty much what you'd read in today's papers about a thing wheeling in and then going at great speed and then making sharp turns and disappearing. And the answer, of course, the question was, what is it? And the answer simply was that, well, over the years, we have had many such sightings of flying axe handles, flying anvils, and all the flying paraphernalia that was popular at that time in history. And that was all there was to it, but I thought it was kind of interesting.
Just flying dishes.
Now, the second thing, and this is something that's bothered me and concerned me for quite some time, have you noticed how the general public in the country seems to be alone in this flying saucer thing? Now, you take something like the sales tax, the Vietnam crisis. You have people who are very, very vocal. I mean, people in the news media, the Walter Lippmann, the Cronkite, Huntley Brinkley, they all take definite stands. The newspapers write editorials. Some of our best reporters come out for it. But in flying saucers, what you generally get is straight reporting, and there doesn't seem to be a reporter, really, of major stature, of national stature, who has yet to take a definite stand on this. There's been no clamor from your so-called big people for a national investigation. It's sort of a tongue-in-cheek. Even the newspaper reporting...
I think that Representative Ford ends up this afternoon clamoring for an investigation.
Agreed. And this is a little bit unique, but over the past few years, and I have a feeling that Representative Ford seems kind of alone in this as well.
Mm.
Your big networks, NBC, CBS, they'll do specials on so many things. The Watts problem in Los Angeles, unemployment situation, but yet a thing of the magnitude of possibility of extraterrestrial visitors has drawn a blank.
Well, they have done special programs on UFOs.
Yes, they have. They have had a movie, which I think was kind of a bomb, but I mean, that's beside the point. It just, there hasn't been enough of it. I get the feeling that an awful lot of people who are sort of, you might consider in the know, the spokesman for the country, for radio, for television, right, for newspapers, are kind of either shying away or they don't believe in it at all.
I frankly, if I can talk perhaps from the inside, I don't think that they're shying away from it. I frankly think that it's because... a large percentage of the people who would be involved in this really don't believe. I think it's too far out to have any fact. And they treat it as sort of a feature type of thing. In fact, I think, Peter, that this is probably the first time that flying saucer sightings have made such extensive hard news, as we call it. You know,
that's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, rather than someone writing about the funny little farmer who saw the three men jumped out and said, take it to your leader, you know, or something like that. The first time I recall, they usually... big stories, but nothing like this. Is that right, Steve?
Well, there have been other times, it seems to me, when they have in the past, and at that time, of course, we gave more emphasis to it, and then after a passage of time, you don't recall how exciting and how much coverage there really was to these, and I think that would explain that. But I do believe that a lot of people feel that anyone who thinks that things could come from outer space is a kind of a nut.
Really?
And yet, if you realize that we do really plan in our own lifetime to make manned exploration to the planet, even though it seems almost impossible that we would ever think of sending a spaceship to another solar system, since it would take 4 light years, that is traveling at 186,000 miles a second, still, I think one of these days, Bob, we're going to do that.
Gentlemen, let's take another phone call.
Yes, Bob?
Yes, sir.
I just thought I might be able to shed a little light on the discussion about the Air Force. I just got out after 7.5 years, and I've had taken these UFO reportings personally.
Mm-hmm.
And the fellow in Minnesota seemed to be a little perturbed about the Air Force maybe not caring or giving them the runaround.
Yeah.
And I think the main thing here is that when they get a hold of somebody at an Air Force site or base like that, they're talking to usually, like he said, an airman or a lower-grade man who... hasn't the authority to do anything, and usually nobody on the whole site or base has the authority to do anything. They can't determine who's calling in. If he says he's a civil defense director, they have no way of proving this, and by the time everything's checked out, of course, it's too late. They definitely do care, I know, and if something is spotted on radar, whether we get a call or not, it is checked out. Not always released, but checked out. The thing is, how can you write a regulation governing something like this to cover the whole Air Force? It's kind of a little difficult. And you run into this situation like he did. He probably got a hold of a lower grade man who had a regulation in front of him, and all he could do was read the regulation to him and maybe sympathize with him.
I do think, Bob, that it's unfortunate that this is set up in this particular way, because since this is the case, they have to always do an investigation after the fact, rather than being able to send a plane there and actually observing and finding out for sure what this thing is. And this leads to a lot of speculation as to what it might have been, and if they can get some pretty good expert witness to say that it probably was so-and-so, then they mark the case off as solved. I remember one night we were sitting at a radar site. This was in Germany, Streeter, and after you've been sitting at a radar site for about 5 months with not a darn thing going on, you know, you're just hoping for something to happen. That's about 3:00 in the morning, and we got these blips coming across the scope, and we figured them out that they were going 18,000 miles an hour. They were just booming down. They were covering Germany and back off through Italy and down like nothing flat.
And we really didn't know what to do about it, frankly. And the captain in charge looked at those things that we called headquarters, and they were sort of half-heartedly kind of debating, should we go up? In other words, they're in a position, if we admit we have to go up, we admit there's something up there, and if there's something up there that's going 18,000 miles an hour, maybe we don't want to find out what it is. And then we're wondering if it was a rocket, and then suddenly somebody came back. They had dropped a screwdriver in the, the equipment in the back, and it caused this blip to come along like that. A little bit earlier today, there was a press conference held, and I gather it was probably held out in Michigan. Let's see what the dateline on this is. Here in Detroit, and this is Dr. J. Allen Hynek, Northwestern University astrophysicist and the Air Force consultant. And he was sent out there this week to investigate the situation. And you'll hear him in the beginning say, I'm talking only about these two sightings. And by that, he means only the two series of sightings that they had out there in Detroit, and not the rest of the many sightings that we have had in our country over the past few months, indeed over the past year. And here's just a portion of that. It's not the best quality at all, but it'll give you an indication of what the gentleman had to say.
I've been talking about these two particular cases. I think, honestly, I am not discussing the hundreds of other cases which certainly could not be explained by MASHCAT. We can explain cases now. Some of these are under investigation further. I'm talking only about these two cases, and I want to keep that quite clear. The light, he says, resembles tiny flames, sometimes seen right in the ground, sometimes floating above it. The flames go out in one place, and suddenly appear in that in another, giving the illusion of motion. No heat is felt. The lights do not burn or char the ground. They can appear for hours, with all the quotations, appear for hours at a time and sometimes for a whole night. Generally, there is no smell and usually no sound except the popping sound of little explosions, such as when a gas burner ignites. The majority of observers in both cases have reported only lights, red, yellow, and green, silent, glowing lights near the ground. They have not described an object. Even the only two observers who did describe an object have stated that they were no closer than 500 yards, better than a quarter of a mile. Now, I doubt that one could make out much detail at that distance at night. It was a dark night, no moon. And by the way, the winds were fairly calm. And I have recommended in my capacity as scientific consultant that competent scientists quietly study such cases and evidence from responsible people appears to warrant such study.
Dr. J. Allen Hynek, Northwestern University astrophysicist and an Air Force consultant. The man was sent by the Air Force out to Michigan to investigate the sightings this past week. Matthew attributes them pretty much to luminous swamp gas. A couple of messages, and we'll be back talking more about the big flight in Michigan.
Yes, sir. Bob.
Yes.
I was wondering something. Now, sure. I'd like to ask Mr. Keogh a question.
Sure.
Now, this gentleman said that he'd call the Air Force and try to get the plane up.
Yeah.
How come this radar in Colorado can't pick it up if they say the FO is up there? And then I have another question.
Sure.
They said a boy in Maine had sighted one, and he shot at it today.
Yeah.
Could I have an answer on that?
Okay, well, he sure took a shot at it. He fired at it four times. He missed three. Hit it once. Doesn't say too much for his aim. I don't know about the UFO. Major Kehoe, what about the first thing? Was there anything picked up in any major radar sites on the flat of Michigan?
According to the Civil Defense Director Van Horn, I think he told you that... FAA radar at Willow Run confirmed the fact that they had two blips during his last sighting. But there have been many cases where the Air Force, as a matter of policy in playing this down, has said there was no radar confirmation, and then later they had to retract and admit that they did have it. Now, that happened last summer out in Oklahoma. The Oklahoma State Police, and we have signed reports from their headquarters saying that they did have confirmation from the Air Force. Tinker Air Force Base in Charleston. Many times these objects were sighted out there, and they were tracked by radar. They had height, their altitudes, speed, maneuvers, and so on. And yet the Air Force gave the public a statement that there was no radar tracking. And you simply have to accept it as a part of the policy to play these things down.
Now, I'd like to just say something about the matter of the radar tracking.
In the Boston area, when I made what I thought was a very good sighting, I called all around and could get no confirmation at all from any of the observatories, and none of the radar stations in this area had said that they had reported it at all. And the object that I saw at the very time that I saw it, and at the in the very direction that I saw it, doing the things that I had seen, was tracked from Fort Monmouth in New Jersey. So this thing was apparently very high. But as far as I could determine, no radar in the Boston area had tracked it.
Now let's go on to Michigan once again. On our line is Daniel Campbell. Mr. Campbell, welcome to Contact.
Thank you, Bob.
And welcome to Boston. Streeter Stewart's with us here. Streeter, in addition to being one of our WBZ newsmen, is also a member of NICAT. Of course, he had Major Keogh on the other end of the line. Now, you have not as such seen any of the saucers, have you?
No, I have not. I've been out three different evenings with sheriff deputies, but I have not yet seen anything.
What time do they usually appear?
We've had them appear anywhere from 7:30 in the evening until about the same time in the morning.
Well, it's about 7. You're on the same time as we are here, correct?
Yeah, Eastern Standard Time.
7:30. You want to stick your head out the window? You don't see anything now, do you? Anything reported out there this evening?
No, we haven't had anything recorded this evening that I know of, but we had quite a flurry last evening.
What kind of a flurry? Can you give us a little detail on it?
We had 200 students at the Eastern Michigan University claim they saw two lights in the sky, one to the east and one to the west of the campus. That's in Ypsilanti. And this was confirmed by Milan Police, the campus police, and the Ypsilanti Police Department. We also have statements from these men stating that they also saw the lights.
What, in addition to saying they just look like lights, gives you an indication that they were UFO and they just look like lights? Could have been things on an airplane or some sort of an advertising balloon going by, any one of a number of things.
Well, we talked to about 15 of the students this afternoon, and all of them have concurred with the fact that the lights were stationary. We had students that say they watched them for 10 minutes. We have another that said he watched it for an hour and a half. The lights changed from red to green to white in order, then back to red, green, and white.
Were the colors bright? I mean, was it a distinguishable?
They said about as bright as a bright star.
Yeah, but I mean the colors themselves, they said red to green to white. Were the changes distinguishable changes or just sort of shading, vague changes?
No, they said they were changing almost... as if two lights, two different colored lights had been put on a policeman's light on his car and then the flasher. And they were flashing in different colors. And then all three lights would change, all three of them would change every 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. So the intervals were that fast.
You also talked to the farmer. Was his name Manners?
Yes, Frank Manners.
He and his son saw one of these things hover or land?
Yes. He saw it hover, I believe.
Mm-hmm. How close was he to it?
We got, as the papers have said, and as I heard on your program, to about 1,500 feet. But I would not agree with Dr. Hynek that is a great distance, because I, too, have been out on the site. And from the vantage point that Mr. Manor had, one would have a very clear vision of anything at that distance. I, myself, I think, judging this distance, tried it, marked it off, was able to tell the year, make, and model of various cars. From that distance. So that isn't such a great distance.
What kind of an attitude pervades the communities out there? How are the newspapers handling this? As straight news or sort of doing it up in feature style, a little tongue-in-cheek, or what?
Mostly straight news. We've had a few feature stories on it. Every once in a while, something will happen that will lend itself to humor, and the papers will pick it up. But generally, it's straight news. We've had just too much out here to laugh at anymore.
All right, gentlemen, let's take some phone calls.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
I'd like to ask a question to Major Keogh, if I may, about a case that happened on October 23rd, 1965, out in Minnesota, where an announcer at KEYL, Long Prairie, Minnesota, supposedly saw robots or creatures shaped like tin cans with arms and tricoid legs.
Now, you gotta watch those announcers. They see all sorts of things. Look out for them.
Appearing to be... not flesh or tissue, but a kind of metal. Is this? How does he account for this?
Major Keogh, do you hear anything about that?
Yes, we have.
Actually, the evidence is rather sketchy, and we are putting it on the question mark list. Actually, you take a thing like that, and you have to have fairly good proof. There should be several witnesses who saw that same thing and get the same dimensions. I believe that you would have to say that that is one of the unconfirmed reports.
Gentlemen, let me sell a loaf of rye bread here in Boston, and we'll be back taking more of our phone calls. Now, oh, before we forget again, Streeter, by golly, what about the young man who mentioned the fact that that fellow up in Maine, wasn't it, took a pot shot at a flying saucer?
Yes, I thought maybe Major Kehoe would have something to say about people who shoot at these UFOs.
Major? Well, we were concerned about the fellow who took a pot shot at the flying saucer.
Oh, yeah. Well, that has happened several times, yeah. And we've been concerned about it, too. Over the past year, there have been reports of people who were alarmed by these things and either dived out of their cars when one of them came down at rather low altitude or actually fired at them. One case in West Virginia where a man had a gun in his car and he jumped out and shot at it. But we haven't had any reports of anyone actually hitting them.
Why did you say we were concerned about that?
Well, if you start that kind of feeling, you can spread alarm, and there's actually no basis to feel fear of these objects, so far as we've found out.
Mm-hmm.
There's no evidence of any hostility, and I think we should look at them more calmly and try to get as much scientific information as we can and impress people with the fact that there's not been any attack, there's been no hostility, and there's a great deal that can be learned if these are actually machines from some other and more advanced civilization.
So from NICAP's point of view, somebody up there likes us?
No, I think that we don't know what motive could be back of these. It should simply be something the Air Force itself years ago suggested in the Project Guts report, that an advanced civilization was concerned because we were now preparing to go into space. We were launching high-altitude rockets. We were exploding nuclear bombs, and they wanted to check and see whether we were likely to be any sort of a problem if we did get out of space.
Bob, I like Jacques Vallée's idea in the book Anatomy of a Phenomenon, in which he suggests that there has been enough evidence now, and it's about time that a group of scientists actually got to work on this as a project, putting their heads together, not just one man going out and interviewing a few people over a few hours, but really working on this to find out if there is something to the UFOs, if they really are from outer space, and coming up with an answer as to what they are.
Daniel Campbell, before we close down our line to Michigan tonight, are you going to be out doing any investigating this evening?
I hope not. I was out all last night.
Well, how many more people do you plan on interviewing out there?
Oh, at least a couple dozen. We're going down to Hillsdale, another NICAP member in Ann Arbor and myself tomorrow.
I would think that if you knew that this thing had been spotted over a particular swamp area and this had occurred a couple of nights in a row, that it would be an excellent idea to go back there on two or three nights to see if you didn't see that again. And if you did have some expert people with you, you could actually see it with your own eyes and come to some kind of a consensus.
Okay, Dan, good night. Thank you for joining us.
Good night.
What station do you work for?
WBRJ, Marietta, Ohio.
Okay, very good. What do you do out there?
Program director.
Oh, the boss. Oh, the boss, man. Straighten up. Here's the program director. Okay, do you have a question now?
I was wondering, I suppose Major Keogh is the one that I really was wondering about. I have heard that back during World War II that the Army and Air Force were interested in the flying saucer situation pretty much undercover, and of course they don't say too much about it nowadays, but I heard that they went so far as to have diffraction grating cameras stationed in some of their Air Force bases, hoping to get a picture, and diffraction grating being similar to a prism.
Boy, the line is really conking out here if you spend all that money. Well, I think we better get questions. Were you curious to know why they did it?
I was wondering if Major Keogh had any information on this, and if this is official or what.
Okay, fine, but we'll let Major Keogh answer that for you. I'm sorry the line is so bad. Thank you for calling. Major?
Yes, they did have an official project. It was announced about 1951 or 52 for these special cameras with the grids, and it turned out to be a failure. Several times the grids came off, they weren't cemented right, they had to be taken back in and worked on them again. They never did turn up anything. Main reason, because they weren't the right type of equipment, and there was no real campaign to use these things. As far as I know, they didn't register a single UFO.
Major Keogh, once again, thank you very much for joining us tonight on Contact.
Thank you, Bob.
Nice to have you back with us. Kind of an exciting week for you, I imagine, huh?
Well, things seem to be building up. Of course, it's been going on a long, long time.
All right. And Streeter Stewart, once again, thank you very much for taking time out from that news department down here to join us for the
program. Thank you very much, Bob.
Okay. And Monday Night on Contact, Bob, we'll tell you about Monday Night on Contact in just a moment.